Our coverage rolling right along here at Kitchen Notes, downtown Omni Hotel. Darren McFarland, Derek Mason, Willie Donick alongside. Good conversation we just had with Bryce Drew, Vanderbilt head men's basketball coach. The men today for Basketball Media Days and the women tomorrow. And we're always excited when this event is in our city. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, always good to catch up with him. He's been nice enough to stop by. I don't know if it was for the food, or for us, or for both. Commissioner, good morning. How you doing?
It's you, because I walked right by the food. Although I'm hopeful on the way out, maybe we can do something about that.
Did you get to sneak into Bridgestone last night
and
catch a little hockey game?
I did, yeah. In fact, I thought I'd be there early. Got caught in a little bit of traffic, yeah. So I was there for the drop of the puck. Got to visit with my friend Sean Henry between periods, first and second period. Watched a little bit in the Lexus Lounge, which is a good
not a bad
that's
place
the spot.
Good way
that
to watch
is the spot.
Watch in the stands. It was nice to actually be in the building for a win. I came twice during the playoffs.
Yeah, we talked
about
that. It
was the only time they lost.
I
changed pullover, so I got a pullover. I bought a new pullover. That one's undefeated.
All right.
We'll bring that one back.
Yeah, not a bad Tuesday night atmosphere in October for a hockey game last night. It was rocking.
It was, and I actually sent a group of our staff here a week ago. If you go back to May and June, watching the fan engagement, the fan participation, the video presentations, the way the displays were projected on the ice to open the game, just everything about the atmosphere. We had our staff come up to a game last week, and then Sean and his staff were kind enough to invite them in and just spent the entire morning talking through how they build an event, what they do from a video standpoint, how the hockey game's presented. And, you know, I think that's a learning experience for us. I walked out of the Stanley Cup playoff game thinking about our move of our football championship game into Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where they have this huge video board, and wanting our staff to learn from this video staff and learn from others how we can just activate in a really exciting way. So they've been great to work with here, the Predators folks.
That's interesting that you bring that up. Willie and I were fortunate enough to travel with them throughout the whole playoff run last year to the Stanley Cup Finals. So we got to experience Chicago and St. Louis and Anaheim and Pittsburgh. And the one thing that really jumps out, and this is not even just a hockey-related, you know, this is sports. We live in a culture, one, it's harder to get people to come to your place anymore, your building, whether it's a football stadium, a basketball arena, a hockey arena. Two, get there early, get there on time. The Predators have done such a good job of, as you've seen, people, unless you're stuck in traffic, people are there. They're not only in the building, they're in their seats 15 minutes before the drop of the puck. They go through the whole thing, the anthem, the skate, everything. Everybody's there where, you know, most places, it's a late – if they're going to be there sometimes, most of the time, it's a late-arriving crowd. That kind of goes back to what you're saying, the videos, the presentation, things they do before the drop of the puck.
Yeah, and we have this phrase, fan engagement, which is how do you make the fans, in a way, part of all that's happening? You know, a game is going to happen on the ice or on the field or on the court, but – the idea that was there 20 years ago that just sitting in dead air is okay, that's culturally moved beyond. And we're attentive to that. Our campuses have been attentive to that. When you read about the schools putting in video boards, it's not just so that they can say, I've got the biggest video board. It's because that's a piece of the game experience. And we know that people are choosing between staying home and watching on an 80-inch big screen TV or being a part of the atmosphere. And what they've done in Bridgestone is create an atmosphere that people really want to be a part of. And it was fascinating last year that people didn't just want to be a part of the atmosphere in the arena. They just wanted to be a part of the atmosphere in Nashville during that playoff run. And that started early. I think I came during the Anaheim series and then was back for a Stanley Cup game. And, you know, it just built.
Yeah.
And I think they were really intentional and strategic about building that. And it's great to see that it's now rolled over into the next season, and hopefully from a competitive standpoint, they'll see some success from that as well.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey at our table. We were down in Hoover for football media days doing our show all week. Obviously a different animal, that environment to this environment. But do you feel like this is – basketball is getting better, the coverage, people, the interest level? Because you know that's been one of your challenges.
Yeah, and it's been a bit of a chicken and an egg analysis. You know, people want to follow winners, winning programs. They want to follow great competition. We've obviously had that in football, so it drives that energy. And I think we are seeing that in basketball. You know, we're in the Omni. Last year we were in the arena. They've got plenty to do over there. But I think the interest is there because of what happened in our men's basketball last season and around our women's basketball last season. We had five teams in the NCAA tournament. Last year when we were sitting here having similar conversations, we come off a year where there were three. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, Vanderbilt went up to Dayton and lost in the first round. Kentucky went the furthest and lost in the second round games. And that's just not the representation we have in any other sport. Well, fast forward this year, on the men's side, we had a Final Four team in South Carolina. That was a great story. We had two teams in Madison Square Garden for the Elite Eight, and then Kentucky playing in Memphis for the Elite Eight. Those are our expectations. And we also had Vanderbilt with the ball and a shot to win the game in that game against Northwestern. And Arkansas, you know, had North Carolina in the second round all but beat and just, you know, wasn't able quite to finish. So that's momentum, and that's what we need, and I think that's created some interest. And, you know, on our women's side, we just happen to have the two teams in the national championship game, which I'm not sure how you do better. And I guess we have the whole Final Four. So we'll identify that for a goal this year.
Now, how excited are you for the men's and the women's? Because if you look at it, like you said, last year we were, you know, it was a few teams. This year coming off of the appearances that each team, you know, the teams had, the SEC had representing the field of 64 men and women, it looked really good for the SEC. And then obviously the women's, you had a champion come out of that. And then the men's, you had, Elite Eight, Final Four. So how excited are you for both?
You want to know the most fun part of my day so far? Uh-huh. First coach I saw is Mike Anderson.
Oh, wow.
Mike's excited about the year. And he says, you can't tell people how good we're going to be.
Uh-huh.
So,
wow.
You know, you don't get that from coaches. But, we got to go out in November and December and win games. Last year, we were close to winning a lot of big games. Mm-hmm. And then when we got to the SEC Big 12 Challenge, we went 5-5, which we started off poorly, and nobody really predicted that. We had some really solid wins then. And I think what you saw is – young men growing up on the basketball court. Because when we sat here, I think my most often cited stat is we had the fewest minutes played on our rosters of any comparable conference. Hmm. And those young men grew up. This year, we've got a bunch of returning players. Kentucky's got a bunch of freshmen, so that's kind of the model there. But they're pretty good freshmen.
Honk if you've heard that before.
Yeah.
Seems to be the norm.
And so there is excitement mm-hmm. because of what happened and because you've seen some growth. And, we didn't have a lot of coaching changes, but what Konzo has done mm-hmm. in a short time at Missouri is great to see. And, you know, he helped some success. Had a successful run in Knoxville and at Cal, so that's a really strong addition. So I'm looking forward to the year, and I have even higher expectations mm-hmm. next year. If you'd asked me where I thought things were headed, I thought we'd be better last year, but not quite what we were. We were better than I anticipated. I thought we'd still be better this year. I really thought next year, where our coaches that had come in, Mike White, Rick Barnes, you mm-hmm. know, for example, Bryce Drew, were in their third, fourth year, where they their players in, people had adjusted to them. That's where I really saw the upside. So it's good to be ahead of schedule, and we just need to keep tracking ahead of schedule.
And this one is sort of a two-part question. One, you answered a little bit about some of the young coaches, what Avery Johnson's been able to do in Alabama, bringing that team back to respectability and them being, you know, winning 19 games, almost 20 games. Talk a little bit about the younger coaches, not necessarily in age, but right. in experience in the SEC. And then we spoke with Bryce a bit about the athlete changing, bigger, stronger, faster. Is there anything that college basketball can do? We talked about possibly, you know, moving the lanes a little bit, mm-hmm. giving the guys a lot more room to kind of maneuver, making it more of a, you know, guys can drive rather than just sitting out at 3-point.
Yeah, from a coaching standpoint, you've got Will Wade also at LSU mm-hmm. added with Konzo this year. And Will added a good run at Tennessee Chattanooga and then at Virginia Commonwealth. And it gets a chance to rebuild. And there's always a lot of enthusiasm in Baton Rouge. And I think what I've heard about him is the amount of work and effort. But then if you go back to our last cycle of incoming mm-hmm. coaches, you know, Avery was part of that, Ben Howland, Rick Barnes, those guys mm-hmm. going into their third season. So you start to see that program take on their character, you know, mm-hmm. their mentality. And that's just an important part of coaching. There's exactly. no denying that. But just think about the three guys I identified. You know, Rick's coached in Final Four, you know, has been a bunch of different places, really well respected. Avery was coached in the NBA, NBA Coach of the Year, has won world championships as a player in the NBA. And, you know, Ben has played in a number of Final Fours and coached at UCLA. I first saw him when he was at Northern Arizona. And they add to what I really think is a very strong group of coaches. And, you know, you've seen programs built, what Andy's done at Ole Miss, what Mark's done at Georgia. He's gotten programs that weren't consistent performers necessarily. Mm-hmm. They're now in the 18, 19, 20, 21 win range. They're in the NCAA tournament, not the NCAA tournament. What I said last year is we just need some incremental movement. Mm-hmm. I think like both those programs have that opportunity. And, you know, I've kiddingly said my goal is to have all 14 in the NCAA tournament. Uh-huh. That's the objective. And, like, people laugh, which they should, but we did it in softball, so why can't we do it in men's basketball? But, you know, part of it, to the essence of the question is it's an attractive place to coach. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what the sport is. And we just had to kind of correct, and you've seen people brought in. So mm-hmm. that's encouraging. On the structure of the game, I do think there's a health in the debate. A guy named Dan Leibovitz I hired as associate commissioner. He's on the men's basketball competition committee that looks mm-hmm. at those rule changes. Dan coached with John Chaney as an assistant for like 12 years. Then he was a head coach at Hartford. He's coached in the NBA, so he's got a lot of respect among our coaches mm-hmm. and nationally. You know, do you widen the lane? Do you mm-hmm. change the three-point distance? We've seen some tweaks this year. I think those are all relevant as these bodies have become exactly. larger, and they're faster too. So the court's smaller. A lot of talk about post play. So I know they just met about a month ago. Mm-hmm. We'll go through this season and look at the cycle of rules changes. One of the things we're doing doesn't relate to the flow of the game mm-hmm. necessarily, but trying to get it more right is collaborative replay. Mm-hmm. In basketball officiating, we've done it, I think, well in football. And that's one of the adjustments this year. And we're the only ones that will be engaging in that experiment because we think there's an opportunity to just have more frequently correct outcomes mm-hmm. as opposed to trying to figure it out on the monitor and the sideline.
We're talking to Commissioner Greg Sankey from the SEC here at SEC Media Day. One thing that I thought was big, and I think we discussed this with you last year, and we really saw it, was the collective scheduling initiative that you guys have been working on for the last couple of years. And I remember down the stretch, we were looking at Vanderbilt with the number one strength of schedule. I think Tennessee was number two for a while. But all of that really helped get teams over the hump. And I kept telling – we had a lot of debates. Vanderbilt, I think, at some point was like 17-15 or 16-14. But I kept saying, I think they can get in. They're going to get in. And they did.
16 losses. First ever 16-loss team to be selected as an at-large team in the NCAA tournament. And that's based on schedule and then winning some key games. I was here when they played Chattanooga, which was a well-thought-of team. And you kind of miss at the end of the year that type of game. And, you know, the turnaround in that type of game and the number of threes that Mr. Cornette hit when it mattered was a big deal. And all of those add to credibility. Winning the SEC Big 12 Challenge game here, that was a big deal. And then they had some success from that point forward. And, you know, credit to Bryce coming in with, you know, not his team, as you think, and a credit to those young men for making that adjustment. But you did see the scheduling progress. And that's where and the outcomes have to follow. So the wins right. have to follow. And that's where I go back to November and December and say we had a whole lot. There was a day where we lost like five games by 3 points or less to ACC teams. Tennessee at North Carolina was one of those in that maybe weekend. If we were close. And so now we want to kind of take that next step and a few more of those wins and still difficult opponents. That's what puts you in great stead in March, which you saw literally play out in Vanderbilt, I think, based on the strength of the opportunities they had to win games in that schedule.
And it's not just one or two teams, right? It's the key is that the entire league
right.
can lift itself up if everybody's challenging themselves non-conference.
Yeah, it goes back to a conversation Mike Slive had to say, you know, guys, this is an ecosystem. The Southeastern Conference, if I can get environmental for a moment, is an ecosystem. We're all contained, and so what one does affects the other. And you're going to have teams that struggle, that are rebuilding. That's just a reality, and you understand that. But what you don't want to do is diminish it down to where in February you're playing an opponent in conference that's 280th in the RPI.
That's a killer. That's, yeah.
You know, they may be 170th or 150th. Last year we tended all towards the top 100 or just over that line. That's much healthier than where we were the previous years. And scheduling's a part of that. You have to win games as well. And it becomes really important because in conference games, anything can happen. You saw Missouri last year that just did not have a strong record, but they beat some teams. That was a tough team to play. Those guys never quit. And they came here and kept playing a little bit. And that's where what you do in November, December, your scheduling, your wins, really affects everyone.
This may be a tough one for you to answer. I don't know what you said when you were asked about it before, but you know, when the FBI story broke, how do you, as a commissioner, how do you react to that? How do you try to help where things can be helped, and what can you do?
Nobody's asked me yet, so thank you for this opportunity. It's always good to talk about FBI. But, I knew that was coming. It actually happened about 9:15, two Tuesdays ago. And we had just finished a staff meeting, and none of us had any awareness this was taking place. And two of our staff were standing off the side and said, "We need to talk to you." And I said, "Well, there's like five more." And they said, "No, we need to talk to you now." And,
which can't be a good feeling, by the way, as the commissioner.
No, it's you never want this. And we've been clear about people needing to act with integrity. We bring every one of our coaches, head coach, assistant coach, all of our operations people, when you're hired, you come to Birmingham. We have three sessions in a year. You come to one of those three. And a part of the message is I say, you just follow the rules. It's actually not that complicated. It's not a 500-page rule book that you have to wake up if you're a coach with and worry about. It's about 20 pages. And just make the right decisions. And if you don't know what your moral compass is, you better figure it out pretty quickly, because you're going to end up in situations where you have to make decisions and compromising. You know, somebody else knows. And if you think you can keep it secret, I think those investigations and the indictments suggest what I've been telling them, which is that's not the way it works. Why you would make a promise that says between you and me to an 18-year-old is beyond me. So it's disheartening. It is really troubling to see kind of the trafficking in human beings that is described in those indictments. We want this sport, and we want intercollegiate athletics, to be run properly. And the fact the FBI is engaged is not something we want. But I said in my statement right after it happened that if they've got resources and tools to get to the root of misbehavior, good for them. And let's find out what's being done wrong, and let's move forward, because this is an important endeavor. It provides opportunities. It provides some entertainment. It provides great competition, and we need to cherish and protect that.
Bryce Drew told us he thinks it can be a good thing, big picture, moving forward.
I look at it that way.
Cleaning up things.
Yeah, I think there are some rough waters ahead, whether it's simply the 10 people indicted and four of those being assistant coaches. And there's obviously been some ripple effects out of that beyond the indictments. The circumstances at Louisville probably being the one that nationally is most publicly out there. But we'll move through that. Let's never forget. Let's learn. Let's change. And let's change in real ways. And let's expect more of ourselves collectively. And when we don't meet those expectations, let's hold people accountable in a real way.
Katy Perry is at Bridgestone Arena tonight. She's been on game day. When game day is at an SEC venue, when are you going to be a guest picker? No. I mean, she's been a guest
picker. I'm like the worst game picker ever, because I'll
no, actually, yeah. Our show is not very good.
I'll transfer it from come back to basketball, from like football to basketball. So there was a day when I was going to be a high school basketball coach in like the 80s. I had almost a perfect bracket one year. The 87 Syracuse, Providence, Indiana, UNLV, that was my Final Four. Someplace
nice.
In my bedroom in my
So you had Rick Pitino's Providence Friars.
Because I had heard him speak at a coach's clinic, and it was incredible that year. And he talked about Billy Donovan and how Billy had changed. And I lived up in the East as a Syracuse fan, so it played out. And fast forward now, like, I know people, and, okay, I don't like them. And, like, I've got, if two SEC teams, like Florida and South Carolina, eventually had to pick, I won't tell you who I picked. But everybody else, you know, goes right to the Final Four.
So you pick with your heart. And it gets intriguing.
I pick with my paycheck, I guess. Not in a bad kind of way, but, yeah, I pick with my bias lenses completely on. So it used to be I beat my wife. Don't take that clip. I'd be more successful in picking a bracket than my wife and my two daughters. And I haven't won one of those in like 3 years, which is embarrassing.
Well, we're glad when the SEC is always in our fine city. So good to see you. Thanks for having these events here, and hopefully we'll keep doing this.
It's always good to be here. Looking forward to our women's tournament being here this year. Men popped to St. Louis, but it's that continuity, and I talked to Sean about how special this relationship has been. The Predators have been great, Scott Ramsey and the city, and the CVB, although I think it's got a little bit different name. I mean, I've never made a bad trip to Nashville.
Well, they're building a lot of buildings, so.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, people tweet about me. They just get that right on Twitter right now. A
lot of buildings.
Right now I have a lease.
Thanks for doing this. Good seeing you.
Yep, good to see you guys. Appreciate you.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, always good to catch up with him. We'll come back and wrap up hour number two of 3D. Tim Hasselbeck to kick off the third hour. It's all next on 102.5 The Game.